Well, we're going to get started. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, and welcome everybody to the Central Orlando Group. Why don't we take just a moment of silence, and then we'll say the Serenity Prayer, and we'll kind of get this thing rolling. Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politic, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy and neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And what we've put together today is really just an introduction to the 12 traditions. I know most of you. I think I know everybody here. And what's happened is over time, the traditions, you know, at Central and at other groups have kind of gone by the wayside. People haven't really paid attention to them. Or they really don't even know why they're there. I mean, we know why the steps are there, to save our lives. But, why are the traditions here? Why did the traditions come about? And so this is really just an introduction. It's going to be 10, maybe 15 minutes on each tradition. And it's really to just kind of whet your appetite. And when somebody puts on a workshop that you hear about, where most of the workshops either happen for 2 or 3 weeks or 2 or 3 hours, and they really study more in depth, you'll want to go to it. You want to find out more. And so there's 4 people going to be here, of course, me. And we've got the area secretary, I believe, Heather. A young man named Rich, who's just coming up on a year and is very interested in these things. And Central GSR, Marissa. Correct?
All right. Yeah.
Okay, I've got a recorder going. It's for my personal use. So if you do mention your name, if you just mention your last name, or your first name, your last name. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Just your first name, but no matter what, I'll delete it, you know, for my use only, and each one of the speakers have already given me permission to record. So what I'm going to do is there's 3 major books that we're going to be using and referring to. The 12 and 12, of course, is the one that we're all really familiar with, but also The Language of the Heart, which was Bill's writing to the Grapevine, and when he first started publishing the tradition articles, and also AA Comes of Age, where he goes into more detail and explains what the traditions were for and why they were working at the time that he kind of turned over the reins and gave it to AA as a whole to run. And so I'm going to just start off with a couple of quotes from him. One is, "Our traditions are a guide to a better way of working and living. And they are to group survival what AA's 12 steps are to each member's sobriety and peace of mind. Most individuals can't recover unless there is a group, and the group must survive or the individual will not." And he was talking about the AA groups as a whole and AA as a whole, and he says, "Ours is not an unusual success story. Rather, it's the story of how, under God's grace, an unsuspected strength has risen out of a great weakness, of how, under threats of disunity and collapse, worldwide unity and brotherhood have been forged. And in the course of this experience, we have evolved a set of traditional principles by which we live and work together and relate ourselves as a fellowship to the world around us. These principles are called the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they represent the distilled experience of our past, and we rely on them to carry us in unity through the challenges and dangers which the future may bring." Now, a lot of us know a lot about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of us know about Bill and Bob and what they started out doing to try to get this thing going. And one thing that Bill said that stuck out in my mind a long time ago when I first started studying these things was that AA had gotten to such a point where nothing outside of AA, no exterior forces outside of AA would ever destroy Alcoholics Anonymous. If it's going to be destroyed, it'll be destroyed within by ourselves. And that's why the traditions are so important to me, because they hold the group's I think, accountable, and they hold them together for each one of us to be able to have a place, and a newcomer to have a place to come and get sobriety. Because that's what we come for, is to get sobriety. We stay because we want a better way of life, and that's my personal observation. So what I'd like to do is, if you don't mind, you know, since we've got a small group and we can take questions and answers, and there's some people in the audience that I know personally that I might call on every now and then just to get them to add their experience to this. And what we're going to do, I think it'd be just, you know, simple. Everybody's got a 12 and 12. And I think what we'll start off doing is reading the long form and then the short form of each tradition. And then the person that's going to kind of do a little history behind it will step up here and kind of talk about that. So why don't we start with Mike, why don't you read the long form? That's going to be on 189 in the back of the 12 and 12.
My pleasure. Twelve traditions. Tradition one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. AA must continue to live, or most of us will surely die. Hence, our common welfare comes first, but individual welfare follows close afterward.
All right. And Terry, would you read the short tradition? Mm-hmm. You can read it behind me if you want.
Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity.
All right. And I'm going to have Rich come up and kind of talk about the first tradition.
Afternoon, everyone. Jim had told me we're kind of going to say our names once and then keep things moving along. So that's what I'm going to do. What I'd really like to start out with the first tradition is, you know, we've read the short form and the long form, but I'd like to dive into it a little deeper in the 12 and 12. So we're going to take at least a minute or two to read some out of the 12 and 12 as a group. So, Luis, will you help us start that out?
Okay. Where am I reading?
From the beginning of tradition one. It should be page
129.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Luis. Tradition 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. The unity of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most cherished quality our society has. Our lives, the lives of all to come, depend squarely upon it. We stay whole or AA dies. Without unity, the heart of AA would cease to be. Our willed arteries would no longer carry the life-giving grace of God. His gift to us would be spent aimlessly. Back again in their cage, alcoholics would reapproach us and say, what a great thing AA might have been.
Thanks, Luis. Pick up for him, Dave?
Sure. Does this mean, some will anxiously ask, that in AA the individual doesn't count for much? Is he to be dominated by his group and swallowed up in it? We may certainly answer this question with a loud no. We believe that there isn't a fellowship on earth which lavishes more devotion, care upon its individual members. Surely there is none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, talk, and to act as he wishes. No AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can punish or expel. Our 12 step to recovery are suggestions. The 12 traditions which guarantee AA's unity contain not a single don't. They repeatedly say, we ought, but never, you must.
Thanks. Anyone else like to read a paragraph?
I'm Farrah, great alcoholic.
Okay.
For many minds, all this liberty for the individual spells sheer anarchy. Every newcomer, every friend who looks at AA for the first time is greatly puzzled. They see liberty verging on license, yet they recognize at once that AA has an irresistible strength of purpose and action. How, they ask, can such a crowd of anarchists function at all? How can they possibly place their common welfare first? What in heaven's name holds them together? Those who look closely soon have the key to this strange paradox. The AA member has to conform to the principles of recovery. His life actually depends upon obedience to spiritual principles. If he deviates too far, the penalty is sure and swift. He sickens and dies. At first he goes along because he must. But later he discovers a way of life he really wants to live. Moreover, he finds he cannot keep this priceless gift unless he gives it away. Neither he nor anybody else can survive unless he carries the AA message. The moment this 12-step work forms a group, another discovery is made, that most individuals cannot recover unless there is a group. Realization dawns that he is but a small part of a great whole. That no personal sacrifice is too great for the preservation of the fellowship. He learns that the clamor of the desires and ambitions within him must be silenced. Whenever these could damage the group, it becomes plain that the group must survive or the individual will not. So at the onset, how best to live and work together as a group becomes the primary question. In the world about us, we saw personalities destroying whole peoples. The struggles for wealth, power, and prestige was tearing humanity apart as never before. If the strong people were stalemated in the search for peace and harmony, what was to become of our erratic band of alcoholics? As we had once struggled and prayed for individual recovery, just so earnestly did we commence to quest for the principles through which AA itself might survive. On anvils of experience, the structure of our society was hammered out. Do you want me to read the rest, or do you want to choose somebody else?
I'll read it. Countless times, in as many cities and hamlets, we reenacted the story of Eddie Rickenbacker and his courageous company when their plane crashed in the Pacific. Like us, they had suddenly found themselves saved from death, but still floating upon a perilous sea. How well they saw that their common welfare came first. None might become selfish of water or bread. Each needed to consider the others, and in abiding faith, they knew they must find their real strength. And this they did find, in measure to transcend all the defects of their frail craft. Every test of uncertainty, pain, fear, and despair, and even the death of one. Thus it has been with AA. By faith and by works, we have been able to build upon the lessons of an incredible experience. They live together in the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, which, God willing, shall sustain us in unity for so long as He may need us.
Thank you.
What I really love about the traditions is that they really started to pick up right where the 12th step left off. All of a sudden, you know, I got sober through the 12 steps, and, you know, it was kind of the question, now what? But the 12th step is all about, you know, connecting with another person. And that, when we look at the first tradition, it's all about unity. You know, when I was out drinking, that certainly wasn't the case. And, you know, back long before there was traditions, you know, when Bill reached out and needed to find another alcoholic and found Bob, you know, he didn't know it. He was just trying to keep himself sober, but he was starting to lay the groundwork right there for the unity. Because, you know, one drunk alone couldn't stay sober, but one drunk working with another drunk, well, now we suddenly have a chance. And, you know, there are a lot of missteps that can come that the first tradition helps safeguard us from. You know, all of a sudden we've done the steps and we know a thing or two, and pride, fear, and anger can still, you know, arise. I know it certainly can for me. You know, personal authority or bickering between others. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I love the first tradition and have that as there as a safeguard. As Jim had mentioned before, the three books that we're using are the 12 and 12, AA Comes of Age, and Language of the Heart. There's one thing here that I was reading in the Language of the Heart, you know, saying, each knows he observes a high degree of honesty, humility, and tolerance, or else drink again. For us of AA, drink is to die. To love God and fellow man is to live. He knows so well that we AA shall have to hang together or else hang separately. At first the spiritual life because he must. He presently lives it because he wants to. And, you know, it really struck me that in this, you know, if humility was the answer for me getting sober, why wouldn't humility once again be the answer when pride came up, when I thought I knew better, you know, when anger came up, or any of these issues? And, you know, Bill wrote very prolifically through Language of the Heart is a collection of grapevine articles that he had written. And he often talked about, you know, humility, if that can save us from our alcoholism, you know, why wouldn't that be what we turn to immediately to be able to save our group and keep us together? Also in Language of the Heart, he talked about, you know, we learn that in matters deeply affecting the group as a whole, our common welfare comes first. Rebellion ceases and cooperation begins first because it must. We have disciplined ourselves. Eventually, of course, we cooperate because we really wish to. We see that without substantial unity, there can be no AA, and that without AA, there can be little lasting recovery for anyone. We gladly set aside personal ambitions wherever these might harm AA. We humbly confess that we are but a small part of a great whole, as it mentions in that tradition. You know, when you go to a meeting or you're interacting with your fellows, you know, you don't necessarily have to love everybody or be everyone's best friend, but when there's a newcomer that walks in the room, you see everyone put aside their personal differences, because what really matters is helping someone get sober and stay sober, above all else. And that begins with all of us working together, regardless of what our background is or where we come from. It's about where we're going. Bill was speaking at the 3rd Annual Southeastern Regional Convention up in Memphis, Tennessee. And part of the importance of unity is, you know, it needed to be here. Everyone needed to be unified so that when the next newcomer walked in the door, when I walked in the door, it would be here. And when, you know, future people walk in the door, it would still be here. And Bill said, for thousands of alcoholics yet to come, AA does have an answer, but there's one condition. We must, at all costs, preserve our essential unity. It must be made unbreakably secure. Without permanent unity, there can be little lasting recovery for anyone. Hence, our future absolutely depends upon the creation and observance of a sound group tradition. First things will always need to be first. Humility before success and unity before fame. And when I came to the 12th step, I thought that was kind of the end of the journey. But unfortunately, that my sponsor reminded me that no, that's just the beginning of the next adventure, and there's a lot more for me to learn about and live the first tradition. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, where do we leave off? Who's the last reader? Don? All right, let's go to the long form of tradition 2. And Adrian, if you'd read that.
Okay. Tradition 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God. He may express himself in our group functions.
All right. And David, you want to read the long or the short form?
Short form.
132.
Yes.
The short form is on page 9.
That's the long one. Okay, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern.
All right. Something I wanted to, that really struck me, if you look at the long form of the traditions, they're long. And if you look at the regular short forms, they kind of match up with the 12 steps and kind of go together on the same size board. The only tradition that changes and gets longer from the long form to the short form is tradition 2. And what is it? It's our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. And so one of the things in tradition 2 talks about, you know, that it'll come in, I think, when Heather does tradition 9, it talks more about, you know, trusted servants and things like that. But one of the things was that they wanted Bill to shorten those long forms down so they could fit side by side with the 12 steps. But then that was added later on, I think, mainly so we would all understand that the leaders that we thought were leaders, the people that are at our group conscience, that do the service work for each group, are that. They are not there to govern. They're just as trusted servants. And they're just to do what you ask them to do and nothing more. Like I said, Marissa's our GSR, and when we ask her to do something, she brings it back to the group. And a lot of times, the group says, Marissa, we want you to go to area and vote your group, your conscience. You represent all of us, and we trust you as one of our trusted servants to vote for the best of what we think but we really don't know the answer as a group, and so we can't vote and say, yes, vote for coffee, no, vote no for coffee. When you get up there as a trusted servant, you have a feeling for the group. And that's what we do. We trust the people that we put in positions, but we don't put them up there as governors. We don't put them up there as really leaders. There are leaders, but the leaders are but trusted servants. And a couple of things in tradition, too, that really come to me, and this is also coming from Language of the Heart. It's from when Bill was talking about it. It says, sooner or later, every AA comes to depend upon a power greater than himself. He finds that the God of his understanding is not only a source of strength, but also a source of positive direction. The member experiences a new inner security together with a sense of destiny and purpose that he's never known before. And then every AA group follows the same cycle of development. We're coming to realize that each group, as well as each individual, is a special entity, not quite like any other. We believe that every AA group has a conscience. It's the collective conscience of its own membership. Trial and error produces group experience, and out of our corrected experience comes custom. The greater power is then working through a clear group conscience. And about the leaders, you know, it's harder still to accept the now proven fact that the conscience of the group. And here's something that really comes from AA comes of age. That a lot of people don't realize. It's when Bill talks about when properly informed, the conscience of the group, when properly informed of the facts, issues, and principles involved, was often wiser than any leader, self-appointed or not. And a lot of times when Bill was writing this, he was writing it from a first-hand experience, because he was learning as he went around visiting other groups around the country. A lot of people don't know that Bob did spend some time going around the country, but he spent a lot of time in Akron with Sister Geisha working with alcoholics in the hospital. But Bill did a lot of traveling, a lot of visiting, a lot of opening of new groups. And so Bill got to see firsthand what was happening out there, and that's why he was the one that started writing these articles for the Grapevine. The group conscience will, in the end, prove far more infallible a guide for group affairs than the decisions of any individual member, however good or wise he may be. Therefore, we, Alcoholics Anonymous, are certain that there are but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Now, you know, when they talk about opinions, the doctor's got an opinion in the book, and everybody else has got one too, I'm sure. But really, based on experience and study of these things is what we have to offer. And it's best offered when it's based on our own experience with the matter at hand and not hearsay. And so, you know, I heard somebody say this, so this is what it is. Really, you need to go to the source, and you need to find out exactly what they're talking about. And a loving God speaks to the group conscience as the majority vote of the members. We need to listen to all individual points of views, including the minority opinions, with an open mind and place the principle of the matter. Will it help a sick and suffering alcoholic? Will it benefit our group, the newcomer, and visitors above that person who's presenting it? And all pertinent information is studied and all views heard before a vote is taken. And that's the way it should be. A lot of times we get to a group conscience, and I'm speaking from personal experience, where somebody raises their hand and I don't like this, and somebody seconds the motion, and then it becomes a big discussion. And in the old days when we had a little house next door, we were replacing windows on a regular basis because people were going through the windows during a group conscious meeting. And that's not a joke, because around the country, I mean, knives have been pulled, fist fights start. And it has nothing to do with the loving God. It has to do with what? It has to do with my ego. I want this to happen. I think this is best for the group. Well, you can propose that to the group, but the group needs to be the entity that forms its opinion. And whether you like it or not, I mean, that's the deal. And you know, Bill writes, and Bob also talks about how every AA member has the right to be wrong. Well, every group has a right to be wrong, too, and we're each individual. We're not, you know, I don't do the same way your group does it, I don't do it the same way your group does it, or other groups. We do things at Central based on our group conscience, and sometimes we're wrong. And what we do is, from our wrong experience, we learn how to do it right. And it might be a month, it might take 6 months, it might take a year. But eventually, God, working through us all, will get us to the right place. Because AA has always been self-correcting. If a group is wrong on enough things, we've seen it happen here in Orlando, I've seen it happen across the United States, groups will fold when they're wrong enough times and they don't learn from their mistakes. And so it is self-correcting. Like I said, nobody runs the groups. The trusted servants need to be left to do their job within the framework of their duties and how they would interpret and apply their own authority and responsibility to each particular problem or situation as it arises. And so, you know, we've got to let people do the things that we ask them to do. You know, we ask somebody to buy literature, we need to let them, they need to have a guideline, but they need to be let loose to buy literature. We have somebody that supplies our rec, buys our books. We have somebody that goes up to area and represents our group, goes to our district, represents our group at our district. And, you know, it just shows that if you allow the group to be the primary entity that runs itself with God as the voice, things work much better. And I'm going to use myself as an example here. We recently, at Central, we changed our format for our meetings twice a year because we went through a time where we were changing our format every month. Every month we had to retype it because somebody didn't like this and we got to vote and then we got to, it was hours and hours of meeting about it. And so we went to a twice a year changing. We recently changed it. And because of one of the changes in it, I came to a few meetings and I noticed that the groups were jumping up before a final reading was read. And I went ahead, you hearing what I'm saying, the powerful Jim, stepped up and said, I'm going to slip this part right after this part, and that'll keep everybody in their chairs so they can hear the bottom. And let me just see how this works. Well, let me tell you how well it worked. First off, it ate myself. It really ate at me because, well, I don't have that authority, you know. But it worked. You know, everybody did stay in their seat. And second off, boy, did I catch hell. And I should have. And I even told our group chairman that I was going to use this example, that I was wrong. I did not have that authority. It was 48 hours that I allowed that format to go the way it was before I had it changed back. And now everybody does kind of wait to the ending of the readings. And I was wrong. I admitted I was wrong. And at the next group conscience, I get to stand up and say to the group conscience, I made a mistake. And you know what? Nobody got hurt. Nobody got drunk. I felt it was in the best interest, but I am not running this group. The group runs itself with God as its ultimate authority. And that's enough on that one.
Thank you.
We're going to go to tradition 3, and I happen to be that guy too. So who wants to start off with the long form of tradition 3?
I'm done. Tradition 3. Our membership ought to include all who suffer from alcoholism. Hence, we may refuse none who wish to recover. Nor ought AA membership ever depend upon money or conformity. Any 2 or 3 alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation.
Okay. And who wants to read the short form? Go somewhere over here.
The only problem for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking.
How did we get to that? You know, how did we get there? Well, one of the things was that when Bill was traveling the country, he was going to different places, and people were writing to New York. And you got to know, these are in the 40s. We're talking about 46, 47, 48, and things like that, when these things were actually being written, and they weren't approved at that point in time. And what was happening is that there were so many rules that each group was making. Like in Central Orlando group, we have a reading that says, please don't text during a meeting, please don't lean back in your chairs, please refrain from using profanity. Some rules, you know. There were some other rules in the very beginning. You know what some of those rules had to be? You got to be a man. You got to be white. You got to be middle class. I mean, or you weren't allowed membership. You had to be hospitalized for 5 to 7 days. You had to have a diet of Karo syrup, sauerkraut, and stewed tomatoes, I believe. I believe those were the three things that Bill thought and Bob agreed were the best things for us. And so the third tradition really is, you know, yeah. How many of us would have gone through that? I don't know. But basically, you know, there were so many rules that what Bill said is he sent out a notice to every group from the foundation office, and he said, send us in your rules. Send us in your rules and regulations to become a member of your group. This group right here is a pretty large group. And so we have a saying here that you're a member if you say you're a member. I go to a group up in Georgia that to become a member, you have to sign a piece of paper and put your name and your phone number on it. I went to meetings when I was traveling the country in Sparks, Nevada, where you had to put your full name and your address to become a member of that group. And so there were rules and regulations all over the groups of the United States that each group was autonomous. They could do their own deal, but this is the way they were running them. And when they sent all these regulations in, when they compiled them all, what Bill found out was none of us could be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if we put all those rules together. None of us. Not one of us in this room could make it. Well, maybe Vic could, but I don't know that. Told you I was going to pick on you over there, Vic. What? You weren't paying attention. Gotcha. But really, there you are.
One of the problems with the rule is don't text is a BlackBerry. You can go on. You can read the big book.
You can read the big book.
People will come up to me, not in AA, but in church and ask.
Right.
You need to get off the masses.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Technology. And we're going to talk about that in the 11th tradition. We're going to talk about technology.
Can I just mention one thing? About
yes, absolutely, Vic.
You guys have some great presentations.
Sure.
Really being nice about it, but maybe I could get just for a minute a different perspective.
Sure.
On the traditions of AA. What a lot of people don't realize is the program of AA, the Society of AA, almost failed miserably twice. And that was at the writing and the agreement of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous,
correct,
and then the marketing of the book. Mm-hmm. By 1940, they were out of money.
Mm-hmm.
The book wasn't moving. Bill was homeless. They had hocked everything. The publisher wouldn't allow the book to be released unless somebody paid cash for it. And the whole thing was found. And a miracle happened in March of 41 as this guy from Philly, my hometown, came up and wrote an article in the Saturday Evening Post. See, in those days, you didn't need traditions, you didn't need unity. And we overcame that because the book started to sell once they had the article, and 8,000 people inquired and joined AA, and so we were off and running. But then, like you were talking about, groups were failing. Because they had so many rules, regulations, they were getting involved in other interests, and groups were failing. And actually, some of the groups were sending the book back, saying, this is just not working.
Mm-hmm.
And without the traditions, AA might have failed. And the whole idea of unity is it protects the group. It keeps the group in unity, and so that it becomes a going concern. And a great example of unity in a group is the group Central. I'm going to just say one other thing. In 1944, Central became the first group in Orlando. I've been coming to Central on and off for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you can come, as you know, to Central at a noon meeting, sometimes at a night meeting, but I always come to the noon meeting. And if you're late, what happens? You might not get a seat.
That's right.
Now, that's been going on for over 60 years.
Right.
I'm over 60 years old, so my math is a little bad. 44 to 12 is what? How many years is it? 16? Whatever. The point is, Central is a guardian of the traditions and of unity,
mm-hmm,
and it's a going concern. And yet, all these years later, we still fill the house.
Mm-hmm.
So without unity, without the traditions,
mm-hmm,
AA would have we probably wouldn't be here today. And I think that's an important reason why Bill, you know, wanted to put the traditions in place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the steps are survival for me personally.
Right.
But the traditions are survival for the group. And it's important that the group survive, because that's where the message of that, that's where most people get sober in a, sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, not at all. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I was listening to is the guy was talking about, like what you just said, that, you know, the steps prevent me from committing suicide, the traditions commit me or stop me from committing homicide, and if you go further, the concepts prevent me from committing genocide, which is the whole world. And that, but, yeah, I did. You know, nothing up here is original. But, you know, one of the biggest things that I think, you know, what they talked about, and a couple things I'm going to talk about real quick on this, is, you know, when they were talking about who to let in, in the very early days, you know, like I said, they were predominantly white, middle class, and male. And there came a guy, and a lot of people say, we don't know, because I wasn't there, we don't know who it was or anything else. But he came in and he said that, you know, he was an alcoholic and he wanted help with his alcoholism, but, you know, he was also the victim of another addiction that was worse stigmatized than alcoholism. And people say, well, we don't know who he was because we weren't there. And I'm going to say third hand, because Dr. Bob sponsored a guy who started the Cleveland group, Clarence. And Clarence sponsored a guy who I worked for many years. And the story was told third hand to me, but it was a man who wore a dress. You know, people said it was a black man who wore a dress. Well, that's incorrect, because if you study the history, minorities came in later on. But it was a man who wore a dress, and the group members got around, and nobody knew where it was from. Before Bill died, he acknowledged that this happened in Akron, that the leaders of the group there got together and were just panicked about letting this guy in, you know, because, you know, what would people think if we let this guy in? What would it do to our reputation, is what they were saying. You know, here we just crawled out of the gutter and all of a sudden we have a reputation to protect. And, you know, they went around and they had some real, you know, real heated debate over the whole thing. And then one of the members, and it doesn't specify it, and I'd love to just say it was Dr. Bob, and he said, what are we really afraid of, our reputation? And he asked a question. He said, you know, what would the master do? And that solved the whole thing right there. What would the master do? Who gives us the right to be judge, jury, and executioner of anybody? And it goes on to talk about how that person was allowed into Alcoholics Anonymous. He never talked about his other affliction, and he became a great AA member. You know, he did exactly what, you know, we're supposed to be doing. He carries the message. And then there was another threat, and it's kind of funny because I used a different book to find this one, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. And the next threat from the membership was from Dr. Bob himself. And he showed somewhat less assurance upon confronting the most troublesome and in some ways the most unwelcome minority in AA's olden days. He said it, not me. Women. Women. Really and truly. When the first woman came to Alcoholics Anonymous, came to Dr. Bob, he said, no, this is not for you. Women aren't alcoholics. You know, women can't be. Because you got to think, this is 38, 39, 40. Real women stayed in the home. Real women who were alcoholics weren't in the bars where men were. They weren't out carousing. They weren't out drinking. And if they were, this is his words, not mine, they were nymphomaniacs. And that's the word they used back then. You know, fallen women is what's used in one of the things. But it's really funny how the wives of the early alcoholics had a lot to do before Al-Anon came around. Because it was the wives that would take in the women alcoholics in the very beginning. So Anne, Henrietta Cyberling, Lois, those people took the alcoholic women under their wing and helped them until such a time, and I'm probably wrong, Vic, but until Marty Mann came in to the New York group and insisted that she was an alcoholic and she was going to get sober in that group. and Bill and that group let her stay, and she got sober eventually. There's all these things have great stories behind them. You can find them on different websites and in different books. Marty Mann didn't get sober right away. Matter of fact, she threw the book out of her insane asylum window at one time and then went downstairs to get it and reread it again. But then Marty, every time a woman came into the New York group, she was the one that the women were assigned to. I mean, you were assigned a sponsor back then. But it was Dr. Bob that said, you know, he had no clue on how to work with women. And so, and it was the wives. And then this happens a lot, and it happens a lot for me when I talk about men should work with men, women should work with women, and they go, that's not in the book. And you're right, I can't find it in you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Can't find it in 12 and 12, can't find it in AA Comes of Age, can't find it in a lot of books. But I found it where Dr. Bob said he had no clue on how to work with women, so the wives of the alcoholic tried to help the early women. The idea that men should help men and women should help women evolved as a means of AA self-preservation before the experience proved it wise for the newcomer's sake. So whether your group has women working with men or men working with women, it doesn't matter to me. It's just, for me, I have to work with a man, and I follow the experience of, you know, Dr. Bob. I don't say that no woman's an alcoholic. I believe women have that same alcoholic tendencies as men do sometimes. And I didn't mean to look at Marissa. I'll now look at Heather. You know, I'll look at everybody. Says I'm not picking on anybody. But one of the things was that they really had to open this thing up. The next one after women was what? What do you think it was? It was right around 40 or 41. A black person came in. And it wasn't just a black person. It was a black woman. And what happened was, in Cleveland, they formed an entire group strictly for black people based on a black woman. They had two black men and a black woman, and they put them together and they formed a minority group. At that time, segregation was still full force of effect. And so they weren't shutting them out of Alcoholics Anonymous. They were helping them form their own group because that's all they knew how to do. And a lot of this, and Vic will tell you, a lot of this is that's all they knew how to do at the time. We're learning, they were learning, and we're still learning today. One of the things that I found was in 1941, it was the first man killed on a 12-step call. And what it was is he was going to pick up a woman who was joining Alcoholics Anonymous, and her husband didn't know it. And her husband found out from the neighbors that a man had came and picked her up and took her somewhere and brought her back. And when he came back on a Friday night to take her to another meeting, the husband was waiting outside in the bushes with a shotgun. And he killed the AA man who was coming to get this woman. And so, you know, that is just, you know, a little bit of history and a little bit why I stick with men and I think women should stick with women. What you do is up to you. But what happened in the very end of all of it, where all the rules were thrown out. Every rule was thrown out. And the rule we have today is the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. It says an honest desire in the front of the big book. They dropped that from the 12th tradition, and they didn't even put in there a sober desire. You can come to an AA meeting drunk. I've seen many people do it. They've got a desire to stop drinking. They cannot stop drinking. You know, they just can't do it. But as long as they're not disruptive and as long as they're not violent, man, they're welcome. They're welcome because something's going to rub off, we hope. Some seed's going to get planted somewhere. And so that's the third tradition. Vic, you want to add anything to the third one?
Well, I believe it was an honest desire, not a sober desire.
Exactly. That's what they dropped, is an honest desire. I was just saying that you don't even have to be sober. And I might have said it wrong.
To help you out for a minute on women.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Where would we be today without the women of AA?
Right.
Come on in.
Right, I agree.
One in four recovering members of AA are women, but one in three serve.
Right.
They serve, I mean, women without... all the years that I served at Intergroup and District 18, without the ladies stepping up, I could have never got done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think whether men should sponsor women, I'm changing my mind about that, by the way. Whether they should or they shouldn't, I think it's an outside issue.
Sure.
When does it become an issue in a group? How about 13th step?
Yeah, exactly.
When they're 13th stepping in the group, the, is that a sign of unity?
No.
Does that create unity when they're 13th step?
Absolutely not.
Do we have any 13th steppers in Central? That's a tough question. Do we have any 13th steppers in...
I don't have a clue. And I'm gonna stick with that answer too. I don't have a clue.
Yeah. When it becomes a controversial issue in the group is when you have 13th stepping, because that can create a lot of problems. Because the woman can become scared, or you start hitting on newcomers. That means you're here for a different reason. Right?
Exactly. And you should be here for the. Yeah, you're being very honest.
So men don't hit on any women.
But also, women don't hit on anything.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Hey, here, here. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It does. Sometimes it works.
And let me leave you with one thing that, and I don't mean to cause a controversy, because real soon, what we're going to find in Alcoholics Anonymous is the old timers are leaving us. The pure alcoholics are leaving this earth. And so a lot of groups, including ours, have a lot of people that come in, I'm an alcoholic addict. But there's very few pure alcoholics left. And what Bill said was that we cannot give AA membership to non-alcoholic narcotics addicts. And that's what he said. For us to be able to maintain Alcoholics Anonymous and keep it a viable entity, you can't give membership to a non-alcoholic narcotic addict. Now, when somebody says, I'm an alcoholic addict, of course, if they're an alcoholic and they're saying they're an alcoholic, fine. But if they're an addict and they want to have membership in Alcoholics Anonymous and they don't drink, I think we have to have, as a group conscience, each group has to have their own conscience on whether or not we should recommend that person go to another meeting. We have closed meetings here at Central. Bill talks about, but like anyone else, they should be able to attend certain open AA meetings, provided, of course, the groups themselves are willing. We have closed meetings, most of our meetings at Central. But we also read at the beginning of the meeting that at a closed meeting, it's limited to persons who have a desire to stop drinking. If this doesn't apply to you, please see the person at the coffee bar who has a list of our open meetings, and it has a list of other meetings. So it's just something that you need to think about. Because eventually, one day, everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is probably going to have tried a drug. And whether or not they're an addict, I don't know. Whether or not they're an alcoholic addict, that's up to them. But unless we continue to strive to keep our primary purpose, I think that's what Bill was talking about, that we could kill ourselves from the inside out. And we're going to go with tradition 4 next. So, Marissa, are you up? Heather!
Yeah.
Heather! There we are. There you go.
Here's my Heather.
Well, I just wanted to pass out a traditions checklist.
There you go.
If you start one of these questions, then maybe your own will prompt. Let's go through all of our 12 traditions.
Boy, I don't want to miss this.
Go to tradition 4, and if you'd like, after I pause, feel free to ask me a question. Comes the panel.
Yay!
There you go. Anybody else got one? Okay, so can I have a friend, please, read for me the short version of tradition 4.
The short one?
The long version. The long of the short.
Always the long.
Okay.
My name's David.
David.
Tradition 4, the long form. Respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups, also those groups ought to be consulted. And no group regional committee or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without referring with the trustees of the General Service Board on such issues, our common welfare is paramount.
Thank you very much. Can someone read the short form, please?
I'm an alcoholic. My name's Luis.
Luis.
Position 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole.
Thank you very much. I just want to first of all thank Jim for asking me to speak today. I had so much fun this week poring over the language of the heart, AA Comes of Age, the 12 traditions. It really kept me out of myself. My higher power came in and managed the rest of my life because I was just all about learning and studying. So what I want to say is maybe not a whole lot of information regarding my knowledge on the traditions, but I'd like to express my love for them and why. And maybe you can understand that. You being here, you probably have a love or curiosity for the traditions too. When I started reading AA Comes of Age, there was a paradox that happened in my own recovery. I realized that Bill and Bob, at a point in our sobriety, they were dying. And our founders were getting older. And there needed to be something in place so that this program would be around for us. And it just hit me to the core. And it just touched me so deep inside to know that someone else, you know, because when I came in the rooms, I didn't think anybody cared about me. I didn't even care about myself. But back in 1940s, when all this was happening, and the Jack Alexander article was written in 1941, and the groups were going from 2,000 to 8,000, from that to 133 in 1950, they wanted us to be around. And they cared enough of my pain and my suffering and my impending doom that they took the time to say, I want this to be around for my children's children's children. And you know what? I'm one of those people. And it just was amazing. So I became very desperate to learn all that I could about the traditions because I wanted the group, which I'll show a little bit later, but I wanted the group to survive. And the group, for me, is Central Orlando Group. And it's, you know, it was a letter that was written I think, Vic, you gave me that letter that was written from the Central Orlando Group to the AA Foundation, mm-hmm. asking them, just letting them know that we were here, one of the first groups ever. And that history just is so amazing. I just love it. Okay, so now you know why I love it. Now I'll try to explain to you a little bit about the history of the fourth tradition and how it came about. Okay, so in 1941, Jack Alexander's article was written, and Vic had mentioned there were groups popping up everywhere. I mean, we had all sorts of groups, and it was just a hustle and a bustle and a buzz. And what I read in the language of the heart, and an example that I'd like to bring to fruition is there was a group called the Middleton Group. That's what they called them, and they called it in the language of the heart. A real crackerjack started up where some elders wanted to make an alcoholic center. You know, at the base of the group, they would have the wet drunks on the first floor, and on the second floor, they have the treatment center, and the third floor, you'd have your education area. And before the traditions, this is something that was just, you know, oh, that's a great idea. Let's do it. Let's streamline AA. Let's make it. This is great. We can do whatever we want. Okay, so a self-promoted chairman or promoter decided to write AA's foundation at the time for charter. And then, of course, AA couldn't do that. So he wrote 61 rules and regulations that this alcoholic center was going to follow, so it would be around forever. You know, this is gonna last forever. Well, we'll just fast forward a couple months into this fiasco. Confusion replaced serenity. And then we had, you know, the wet drunks trying to say, well, all I need is an education. Let's go to the third floor. I can learn about the disease and then graduate. And then, you know, you got the treatment center going, well, I've just been through the 12 steps. I'm going to recruit some of the wet drunks. You know, and it was just a mess. So, and I think you'll find this really amusing of how it started, but there was a little note card that was sent to the AA Foundation from the same person that sent wrote him for charter, and he said, the Middleton Group, number one, Rule 62. Don't take yourself so damn seriously. That is just, you know, in part of the tradition for, it's a group's right. You know, as Jim has explained, you're exercising your right to be wrong. You know, and that's all about autonomy, you know, and being an autonomous group. Vic and I were talking, I think it was Friday, and he had, you know, just impressed upon me about how each group is so individual. And when we, you know, break down the group structure, no two people are alike. So no two groups are going to be alike. We're all going to come about this thing in our own way. And so part of the second part of the fourth tradition is talking about other groups that we affect when we make decisions. And there was just some people who had asked me, you know, what would happen if we broke off from this club and we decided to form our own group? And I said, well, you know, think about the other groups that you're going to affect. Think about the alcoholic when you move that group and then go pick up the where and when, and that group isn't there. Why don't you move when you consult the other groups or the other people that you're affecting, or maybe when the when and where is published next? You know, and that's part of the fourth tradition. This comes from Bill Wilson's articles of Language of the Heart. You know, the group, exactly like any individual, must eventually conform to whatever tested principles would guarantee survival or cease to exist. This is the perfect safety. Stick to the course or be hopelessly lost. The informed group conscience should be the ultimate authority of the group. And a group ought not to do anything which would greatly injure AA as a whole, thus reminding us of our principle of consultation, making sure that we're consulting other groups that we're affecting. These principles are already outlined in Tradition 1 and 2, as you had heard Jim speak about, and the last sentence of Tradition 4 reads, on issues, our common welfare is paramount. That's all I have. Any questions on Tradition 4? Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of the things that I want to say is that because of the traditions, you know, some of them don't need a lot of explanation today. And they don't need a lot of debate or a lot of, you know, going over. And the reason is, they worked. I mean, they worked. When Bill wrote them and the groups implemented them, they worked. And so the ones that the shortest ones that you're going to hear us talking about today are basically the ones that are just, you know, they're just working great. Some of them, I mean, we got to still work on them today, I think. You know, and one of them is the next one. It's Tradition 5. Somebody want to read the long form of it?
Each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose, and that of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers.
All right. And what about the short?
Each group should be that's four. Each group has the one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers.
Well, what's the difference between the long and the short? What did they take out? They took out a word.
Spiritual.
Spiritual entity. Vic, why'd they do that?
I have no idea.
There you go. I wanted you to say that.
Bill clarified.
Mm-hmm.
If you just give me a minute. I mean, when you look at the steps in the traditions and we come in, Heather kind of touched on this. What's the first thing that happens when you come into recovery? What's the question you ask? What do I do? Where do I do? What actions do I take? But if you really step back from the steps in the traditions, a lot of it is what we shouldn't do. Positions we shouldn't take, opinions we shouldn't get into, actions we shouldn't get involved with. Right from step one, right? I mean, what's the whole basis of sobriety is abstinence. That's something we shouldn't do. We shouldn't drink. And the traditions are, in the most part, things that we should not do. We shouldn't break anonymity. But Tradition 5 is what? That's the thing that we should do. That's the primary purpose of AA. And, you know, they when AA became successful, when it was apparent that AA was going to be a great success, the powers to be at the time went to Bill Wilson. He was a very public issue, and they said, Bill, why don't you open this up to everybody? And we hear that question today, don't we, in some meetings. Why don't we just open this up to everything's anonymous, you know. What are some addictions that we have?
Sex.
Cocaine addiction, sex, gambling, computer. What about narcotics?
Eating.
Eating.
Gambling.
Well, let's say you're at a meeting one day and you got an eating addict, alcoholic addict, a cocaine addict, a narcotics addict, a computer addict. And I like that you always use the cross-dresser addict. And suppose everybody wanted to, what would happen? You'd have identification is totally lost. So Bill answered the question by saying what AA is and what, and when he said what it was so, he used such wisdom in this and such brevity. It's recorded. There is a handout where it's recorded. And he said, the purpose of an AA group is sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the working and teaching of the 12 steps of recovery. And an AA group is nothing more than that and nothing less than that. So it's sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the working and the teaching of the 12 steps of recovery. I like to say, you know, with 27 years of sobriety, that I'm a teacher. That's what I like to do. I'm a teacher. Well, people sometimes get upset at that. How dare you? What makes you think you're an expert on this? But every group has to have teachers. They got to have Heathers and Jens and the folks
but
in
you're
here.
Not a paid teacher.
Hmm?
You're not a paid teacher.
We're not a paid teacher. That's tradition.
That, we're getting to that one. We're getting to that tradition.
Anyway, but the sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the working and teaching of the 12 steps of recovery. And that's all AA is, and that's tradition body.
Very good. And let me give you an exact quote. The main, sole, primary purpose of an AA group is to teach and practice the AA program and carry the program of recovery from the basic text to the new member. Okay?
So because five is what we should do.
Yes.
Exactly.
Everything else is what we shouldn't do.
Where did you get that quote from?
AA, as Bill sees it.
As Bill sees it.
Mm-hmm. Page 79, as Bill sees it. Practice these steps and to carry this message, and in this tradition the primary purpose is to carry its message. This message and its message really is encumbered in the third edition cover, the dust cover, I really think. And can you recite it, because I didn't make a copy, Willie? Do you have it on top of your head?
The inside cover of the dust jacket in the third edition, halfway down it says, but the basic text, pages 1 to 164, remains unchanged.
Mm-hmm.
Then it says, this is the AA message. That's it.
That's it.
But personally, you know, I really don't know as much about the traditions as I should do, or as I would like to do. But I think tradition 5 is very ambiguous, because it does say, each group has got one primary purpose, to carry its message. What is the message that the groups are carrying? I've been at groups whose main message is, don't drink and go to meetings. I've been at other groups whose main message is, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Absolute nonsense. They're killing people, and they really don't know it. Whenever they published the fourth edition, on the inside fly cover of that, they took out, what they said was that pages 1 to 164 was the AA message. That's why there is so much controversy going on right now at GSO. And it's also been brought up, you know, to change it back to the wording of the third edition.
Mm-hmm.
But to follow up on what Vic was saying, you know, newcomers, when they come to AA at first, and since the day that I get sober, this is the one thing that I tend to do. every person who comes to AA, they're really confused and they're nervous and they don't know what the hell they're letting themselves in for. You know, what are they going to ask me? What am I going to have to do? And again, I thank Bill Wilson for having the foresight to write down near the start of the big book when he said, if you're an alcoholic who wants to go over it, you may already be asking yourself, what do I have to do? And he says, it's the purpose of this book, not this one, the big book, to answer these questions specifically. That's the message that I'm asked to carry. And I've said this for years, like Big Happy 27 years. I'm a teacher, I've got a long way to go. You know, if I don't know what it says in the first 164 pages in that book, and I haven't applied it into my life, and I haven't reaped the benefits of what this program has to offer, then how in the name of God can I try and carry this message? What do you know?
What do you know?
I'm just a farmer.
That's why I wanted a foreign opinion on it, and I have an American opinion, and both of you have the same sobriety. But the thing is that Bill does specifically say what it is and what this message is.
Yeah.
It is to practice the AA program and carry the program of recovery from the basic text to the new member. And he also goes on to say that two or three alcoholics gathered together in the presence of God with the primary purpose of carrying the message to the still suffering alcoholic creates the spiritual entity within the group. And that can be doing anything. I mean, carrying the message is the first 164 pages. But also carrying the message is being a GSR. Is being a secretary of area, is being a chairman of a meeting, is setting up the chairs. There is service work all around, and each one of that bit of service work, from cleaning ashtrays to coffee cups to setting up chairs to washing chairs to standing up here going, my knees are knocking and all these people are looking at me, it doesn't matter. It's all service work. It's all carrying the message of recovery, and that's what Tradition 5 really holds true to, is it's not 90 meetings in 90 days. It's not keep coming back. It's get into the book. You've got to study the book. You've got to carry what you've learned and what you've been taught by somebody who's been taught by somebody who's been taught. And I think each one of us has to believe that somebody taught the person that taught you, and it came from Bill and Bob because they taught Bill D, number three, and they went from there. All right, we're going to stop there, and we're going to go with Marissa. And Marissa is going to do our Tradition 6.
Hey.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Can I get a volunteer to read the long form?
Sure.
Tradition 6.
I'll go ahead and
Craig.
Craig. Problems of money, property, and authority may easily divert us from our primary spiritual aim. We think, therefore, that any considerable property genuinely used to AA should be separately incorporated and managed, thus dividing the material from the spiritual. An AA group, as such, should never go into business. Secondary aids to AA, such as clubs or hospitals, which require much property or administration, ought to be incorporated and so set apart that, if necessary, they can be freely discarded by the groups. Hence, such facilities ought not to use the AA name. Their management should be the sole responsibility of those people who financially support them. For clubs, AA managers are usually preferred, but hospitals, as well as other places of recuperation, ought to be well outside AA and medically supervised. While an AA group may cooperate with anyone, such cooperation ought never to go so far as affiliation or endorsement, actual or implied. An AA group can bind itself to no one.
Thanks. And can I get a volunteer to read the short?
An AA group should never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, first of all, I just want to thank Jim for inviting me to speak today. on these traditions, and so it's you know, it's been a fun ride for me in the past couple of years as the group's GSR, because one of the primary responsibilities of the GSR is to the group service representative is to be a guardian of the traditions, which in that, you know, becoming familiar with the traditions enough to be able to, you know, be a competent servant for the group and be able to carry that out. Unfortunately, the traditions that Jim assigned me are not the ones that I would consider myself to be an expert on, so which of course is why he gave them to me to study. So I did have more or less have a crash course in reading Language of the Heart and also to AA Comes of Age. I left my electronic copy at home, so I'm just going to paraphrase. And then also, too, some examples have been kind of already given, so I want to make this a little bit interactive, if you will. So raise your hand if you've ever had to do any type of fundraising for a particular cause. Okay. So who can give me an example of some kind of pitfalls or hurdles in that?
Fundraising?
Yeah, well, in fundraising, give me an example of maybe some roadblocks or some hurdles that you come across for a particular cause.
People
endorsing.
People want proof of what you're fundraising for.
Okay.
They want tax letters for a deduction.
Okay.
You do fundraising.
All right.
Making sure the money gets where it's supposed to go.
Okay, making sure the money is supposed to go. Okay, how many people have ever been involved in marketing for a particular cause or endorsing something? Okay, give me some examples of some trouble that comes from that.
Doesn't go where it's supposed to go.
It gets kind of confusing, right?
Well,
kind of sometimes
the funds aren't used for the primary purpose.
Exactly. So in case I'm sure that you've ever worked with donors before, when they don't or lend their money to something, they're lending their name to something, they want to have a voice to what that means. They want it to be about their cause. It doesn't always necessarily mean about what the primary purpose of what it starts. So that's where you see on the news all the time these charities get in trouble a lot, because you see it's being donated to these third parties and ultimately what their ultimate goal was to carry that out. Well, Bill and of course the first, you know, in the early days of AA, they ran across that problem too. I think that Vic had already pointed that out. Of course, like when they started to go bankrupt and when there were issues, there were times that even the Rockefellers had kind of come in to offer to help out. But then once again, when you have that comes, you know, you're losing what that message is, and also to opening yourself up to giving other people the opportunity to govern, because they're the ones that give the money. They're endorsing you. They're sponsoring you. So, you know, in the early days of AA success, you know, to some degree, there were so many people that were recovering that there were, you know, we alcoholics love to dream big dreams. So, of course, we want to go in. We want to run the hospitals. Heather gave examples of groups that wanted to lend their name to that. They wanted to you know, rewrite medical textbooks. They wanted to be the educators of that. And of course, you know, in that experience, basically in the end of that, it caused a lot of upheaval. It caused a lot of confusion. And then to paraphrase Bill Wilson in Language of the Heart, he basically said, you know, the you know, all of these things divert us from our primary purpose, and that AA needs to remain poor. AA doesn't have any business being in business. It diverts it from the primary purpose to help each other. That money should really only be used in the purpose from one alcoholic carrying the message to another alcoholic. So I will conclude by telling the story at the end of the 12 and 12, because this is to me one of those traditions where I think that a lot of us can kind of agree that, you know, it's not really a good idea to you know, lend or endorse our name or to lend money or to take money, so to speak, which also too ties into the seventh tradition, and every group ought to be self-supporting. So these adventures or misadventures implanted a deep-rooted conviction that in no circumstances could we endorse any related enterprise, no matter how good. We of Alcoholics Anonymous could not be all things to all men, nor should we try. Years ago, principle of no endorsement was put to a vital test. Some of these great distilling companies proposed to go into the field of alcohol education. It would be a good thing, they believed, for the liquor trade show to show a sense of public responsibility. They wanted to say that liquor should be enjoyed, not misused. Hard drinkers ought to slow down, and problem drinkers, alcoholics, should not drink at all. In one of their trade associations, the question arose of just how this campaign should be handled. Of course, they would use the resources of radio, press, and films to make their point. But what kind of person should head the job? They immediately thought of Alcoholics Anonymous. If they could find a public relations man in our ranks, wouldn't that be ideal? He'd certainly know the problem. His connection with AA would be valuable because the fellowship stood high in public favor and hadn't had an enemy in the world. Soon they'd spotted their man, an AA with the necessary experience. Straight away, he appeared at New York's AA headquarters asking, "Is there anything in our traditions that suggests I shouldn't take a job like this one? This kind of education seems good to me, and it's not too controversial. Do you headquarters folks see any bugs in it?" At first, it did look like a good thing. Then doubt crept in. The Associated wanted to use our member's full name in all of its advertising. He was to be described both as its director of publicity and as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of course, there couldn't be the slightest objection if such an association hired an AA member solely because of his public relations ability and his knowledge of alcoholism. But that wasn't the whole story, for in the case, not only was an AA member to break his anonymity at a public level, he was to link the name of Alcoholics Anonymous to this particular educational project in the minds of millions. It would be bound to appear that AA was now backing education, liquor trade association style. And, of course, the man turned the job down for obvious reasons. And, you know, I just kind of want to share, you know, in terms of learning these traditions. I think when I cover Tradition 10, I'm going to go into little bit of experience and how it's, you know, been able to reach other countries in terms of, you know, groups that have actually worked these traditions and practiced these traditions into their daily lives and how it's been successful, you know, around the world. And I know in my own personal experience and learning this history and learning that, you know, it kind of gives me a little bit of relief that our founders weren't perfect either, of course, you know, and they did a lot of things by trial and error, and that a lot of times we learn traditions by doing the things that we're not supposed to do. And I learned most of AA's traditions by breaking them, of course, until I had loving sponsors tell me that I'm, you know, veering off onto some other path. But, you know, one of the things, too, that I think that, you know, one of the good things was I had a sponsor actually have me look up some of the definitions in the dictionary for words that I didn't understand. Of course, one of those is tradition. Basically, most Webster variations of definitions will tell you the etymology of tradition is basically passing an action or a thought or an attitude from one generation to another. It doesn't really talk about beliefs. It doesn't really talk about rules, but you're passing an action or an attitude, and that is based on our experience. So on that note, I'm going to let whoever's kicking off Tradition 7, unless anyone has any questions, comments.
Well, I have a question.
Yeah.
What's the difference between an actual endorsement and an implied endorsement?
An actual endorsement? With an actual endorsement would be actually physically putting a name on something, like putting your name on a clubhouse, for example, Alcoholics Anonymous on Saint House, put it on writing. An implied endorsement would be, I guess, maybe a... or maybe going into a treatment center and that it's applied that Alcoholics Anonymous is endorsing a particular method of treatment by having a meeting
implied
into...
Implied and actual endorsements break Tradition 6?
Yes.
So,
thank you.
And I'm going to follow up on that also. Intergroup was asked by a local university to come in and start an AA meeting on campus because a lot of the young college students were having problems with alcohol. And so Intergroup got together with their PI committee, which they should have, and they went out to the university and they started to form the meeting. And the university said, "We're going to give you this room, we're going to give you this coffee pot, we're going to give you these tables, we're going to give you this, we're going to give you everything you need. You know, we just want you to come in and run some meetings for our students." And what the PI committee had to say to them is, "We would love to come out and start a meeting on campus, but we can't accept your coffee pot, your coffee, your cups. We can rent your room based on the donations that we collect." And the university was just amazed, and they were like, "What are you talking about?